you're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 22nd of August. Joining us on the program today in about 1 hour's time, a little more than an hour, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, talk about the Habs and their offseason. Later on in the program, we're going to preview Puck Talks Live, which comes to Winnipeg in September, the 15th of September. Our very own Richard Pollock, one of the panelists, so we'll talk about that. Also going to give away some tickets to Puck Talks Live later on in the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. I say good morning to you, gentlemen. It's nice to see you. And Ezzy, I didn't think you would have your microphone plugged in by 9:01, so congratulations on getting that done after your early morning periscoping.
Well, yeah, I use a special microphone because I'm a special person, so it takes me a while to plug that microphone in. By the way, Drew, good morning, boys. Can I win tickets to Puck Talks? Because I want to see Richie. So
no, you can't win tickets. It's only Illegal Curve members are ineligible. You have to be a member of the public. The general public is who we're giving the tickets away.
I'm still going
to
call in.
You could be in the studio calling in.
Had you not been periscoping pre-show, you would have had your mic already plugged in or your headphones already plugged in.
That was
Legal Curve is getting some followers on Periscope. Follow us on Periscope, and that's the new thing. I mean, I was talking to Rich. Nobody's on Snapchat anymore. I mean, Snapchat's very 2012. Periscope is where it's at. After Huss was periscoping the pierogi competition, well, it was actually Remus periscoping the pierogi competition because Huss was hosting the pierogi competition. But Remus actually at one point had two phones going. I don't think either of them were actually broadcasting. Yeah. But I'm very into Periscope these days. You should try it out if you haven't.
I'll just let you be very into it and I'm going to go on with my day.
It's exciting. Like, you can see people all across the world like doing stuff. It's great.
Let's get started talking about Nikolaj Ehlers. An interesting article from Swiss Hockey Net. Swiss Hockey News.
That site.
Yeah, which is not the... I don't know anything about it, so I can't really say one way or the other. But, to sort of back up what they're going to say, Dennis Bayak in a column that he wrote for TSN.ca and was posted late last night also sort of corroborated the same information. Here's the quote from Nikolaj Ehlers, of course, the Winnipeg Jets... potential young star. Quote, I honestly do not think about this now, that is, not making the Winnipeg Jets. But Switzerland is at the top of my list if I'm not going to play in the NHL in the upcoming season. Lot of chatter that if Ehlers isn't to make the Jets out of training camp, 3 weeks to a month from now, that he will not return to the QMJHL, to the Halifax Mooseheads. He obviously can't play in the AHL as he's still too young, but a lot of chatter that he will instead go play overseas in Europe, be it in Switzerland. Dennis also suggests that he's heard rumors that Denmark and Sweden and the KHL are on the list as well. I'd be shocked if it's the KHL. Switzerland and Denmark seem certainly more plausible to me. What are your thoughts if Ehlers doesn't make the Jets and chooses to go to play in Europe next season rather than back into the QMJHL?
Drew, in theory, I don't have a huge issue with it. I think the first thing is based on the Jets forward group, which we're going to talk about later, I'm pretty sure he's projected to be one of the members of the team. Because, they don't have a ton of depth right now, and they certainly seem to be relying on youngsters, and we'll talk about Lee Stempniak's comments in a little bit here. The fact that he doesn't want to return to the QMJHL because he probably feels he can't gain anything experience-wise. We've talked about it on this show at length about being tweeners and not being able to go to the AHL because you're too young and the deal that the NHL has. but really not being able to develop anymore in the QMJHL. And you wonder if that rule will eventually be changed or not. Having said all that, if I'm a player, I'd want to consult the organization as to, you know, I could tell them I'm going to go play overseas, but where do you think would be the best development spot for me? So consult them. Don't necessarily give them the final decision on that, but at least consult them in regards to where they think you'd be best off and if they have scouts in the area, whatever it may be. So, you know, I'm not completely opposed to it, because I think the NHL is behind the times. I think this deal with the CHL probably has to be over at 19 years old and maybe give an option at the 20-year-old level, and then give the other player the player an option to go, or the team the option to have a player play in the AHL at that age. Because these guys are so developed. I mean, what are we seeing? Probably less people playing hockey, but more specialized training. And so
like
the guys,
a year.
Yeah, so the guys are, a lot of these guys are ready to roll at 19, at least at a pro level. And that's basically what he's saying. But he's saying a pro level is not available for me in North America, so I'm going to return to where I'm from, which is Europe.
I want to point out that we don't know that he's necessarily not consulting with the Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, I'm not saying that yet. Plans. I'm not saying that.
He probably is based on, I mean, there's no reports of any animosity, of course. So he probably is consulting with the Jets about his development if it's not in the NHL level. But I do, what are your thoughts? Do you think this could be a good move for Ehlers to, if he doesn't make the Jets, to go play overseas in Europe instead?
I think that's possible, that it could be a good move. And, you know, we should mention, too, that his dad is a coach in the Swiss League.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's obviously having some type of impact. His dad, Heinz Ehlers, is the coach for Lausanne, which is a team in the Swiss League. So, I mean, that's huge, right? He practices and has spent time there, mm-hmm. obviously from Denmark. And, you know, Rich, I agree with you. When you look at the Jets' depth chart, and Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun did a really good job projecting the Jets' lineup. Realize we're still 3.5 weeks or so away from training camp, but you know, he had Ehlers in there and he actually had Brendan Lemieux. But the point being that the Jets decided not to bring back Jim Slater, Lee Stempniak, Yuri Talusti, Michael Frolik was not signed here. So there's some holes on this roster. So you want to throw in Andrew Kopp on the fourth line, you want to throw in, you know, a Joel Armia. There are holes on this roster because, you know, you have players like, you know, Matt Fraser, Matt Halaschuk, who might spend significant amounts of time or the whole season with the Manitoba Moose. So I agree with Richie. I think there's a really good shot Nikolai Ehlers spends the whole year with the Jets, and at the very least spends the first 9 games before he uses up his entry-level contract. So to answer your question, though, if he doesn't make the Jets out of training camp or doesn't stay with the Jets after 9 games, I would have no problem with him going to the Swiss League. Look, he scored 100 points last year. It was on a 33-game point streak. He really has nothing to prove in the QMJHL, right? And you look at other players in recent memory, Jonathan Drouin, Mikhail Grigorenko, guys that really have nothing to prove in the QMJHL. The QMJHL, I would say, is the third best out of the junior leagues. I know I'm going to get in trouble from our boy Grant Sonnier, but I think the OHL is the best league, and then WHL. I think maybe if he was in the OHL, he might stay, but I really don't think he wants to play junior anymore. And I think we'd all agree, Rich, that at this point, with his skill set, because his skill set is so high, he has the ability to make plays at that high level. He's shown this at the World Juniors and on and on and on. You can't blame the guy for wanting to turn pro at this point.
No, you can. Just to clarify, if he plays over 10 games, he burns a year of his entry-level deal, making him closer to arbitration eligibility. He has to play, I believe, 40 games to actually get closer to free agency, meaning 7 years accrued, just so people know. So he can play over 10 and less than 40, and he gets closer to arbitration but not closer to free agency.
And if a player plays 10 games in parts of 2 seasons, it's not cumulative. It has to be in
right.
one season.
That's right.
Good to know. I wasn't aware of that sort of distinction between the two. I thought 10 games, you just burn a year of entry level regardless. So they do distinguish between the two of them. Well, one thing about, you know, Ehlers, in terms of when the Jets seem to pencil somebody into their lineup, you know, we saw it with Scheifele a couple years ago. You know, people said that when he started, you know, people said, oh, he's struggling a little bit, and he was eligible to go back to the AHL at that point in time. But the Jets kept him up the entire time, you know, throughout his quote-unquote struggles, or maybe, you know, the growing pains that occur when you're a young player learning on the job. It seems that the Jets so far, you know, based on whatever evidence in front of us, when they feel a player is NHL ready, they let that player, you know, really work out for themselves, you know, the issues that they might be having, if there are issues, or the developmental side of things. They let them work that out at the NHL level.
But Shifley played all of his years in the CHL.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But when he came into the NHL, people were like, well, you know.
At the AHL.
But right. You know, I remember on this show, we said, you know, where, you know, when Shifley finished, exhausted his junior career, we said that, you know, he probably should play a little bit in the AHL. Mm-hmm. But the Jets had that hole, and they had penciled him in to fill that hole. And there didn't appear to be any thought from the organization standpoint to send him to the AHL at any point in time. And that seems to have proven itself out to be the right move, given his development as of late.
I guess with that, yeah, it's true, Drew. I guess with that point, you had the option, at least, of doing so.
Right.
Whereas now, you wouldn't have that option. I think there's more pressure than on the team in that case, especially if there's early success from the player and maybe a little bit of struggles right after that. And what player are you getting? 10 games is hard to determine whether or not you... And there's an adjustment period that is going to have to take place.
Well, that's part of the problem is that the evaluation window. I mean, a lot of players throughout the course of the NHL have looked great for 10-game spurts and then fallen steeply off a cliff. And if Ehlers starts off strong and he burns those 10 games and then it's downhill from there. Sending him back to the QMJHL is almost not really an option. I mean, we saw it happen in Buffalo with Grigorenko a number of years ago when they kept him up for some reason. He wasn't ready, but they kept him up.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of the season, they sent him back down to Montreal. Yeah. Was it Quebec?
Yeah,
the Ramparts.
Grigorenko is maybe a bad example because he also was missing practices and stuff like that. But your point is well taken, Drew, on both points that you made there. Mark Scheifele is obviously a different case. Because he was the first Jets 2.0 draft pick, and they knew that he could probably slot in different position. And I agree with Richie, different pressures 3 seasons ago versus now. But your point is well taken, because when you decide that a player is ready, and they made that decision with Adam Lowry, and Adam Lowry was by no means guaranteed a spot last year because he was obviously 20 years old. But we'd all agree that Adam Lowry had an amazing season. Obviously, you guys know that how much I like Adam Lowry, and I think we all know that he had a pretty darn good rookie year.
But he had a year in the AHL to develop.
Yep, and that's a good point. And he had a good year, showing in the AHL, and that's not an option, unfortunately, for Nikolaj Ehlers. It is an option for Josh Morrissey. Similar position, really, that Josh Morrissey was in last year. Mm-hmm. You could argue that, okay, well, what else does he have to prove in junior? Well, it's not really just about that. It's that he is in junior, and he doesn't have the ability to play in the AHL because of the rules that don't allow 19-year-olds to play in the AHL. And he had a good year, maybe not as good of a year as the previous year when he came up and played for the Ice Caps and all of that. But
the difference with Morrissey, though, is the Jets, didn't have the huge gaping hole on the left side of the defense last season that they do within their top six this season that they hope Ehlers is going to fill. I mean, Morrissey, I think they would have liked to see him make the team last year, or they would have been fine if he had made the team last year, but it wasn't essential. I think it's essential to the Jets' chances this year that Ehlers comes in and is good enough to solidify that top six or that top nine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're talking from a top nine role, Drew, skill-wise.
Sure.
Now, I mean, we don't know what the pieces are going to fit here. We don't. I mean, I don't know who else is playing in the top nine, to be honest.
Besides him, you're saying?
Well, it's not going to be Thorburn or Peluso. It's not going to be Hauschek. I'm just talking based on quality of skill level and play.
Well, that's why I think Weber was bang on. I think Bermie's going to play on the wing.
Right, but I'm including Bermie in there.
Yeah.
I'm saying who's the ninth guy. If you're going to say all those guys, you're going to say Shifley, Little, and Lowry up the middle. You're going to say your left side is Perreault, Bermie, and Ladd. Your right side is Stafford, Wheeler, and blank. Who is blank aside from Ehlers? Now, is it, I don't know, is it a guy like Patan who you want to throw on the wings? You only can play center in the NHL, yada, yada. I don't know, but there's that hole. And unless you're signing somebody, then it's going to need to be one of those young, skilled players, because they can't compete, in my opinion, in the Central Division with any of the aforementioned players like Hauschek, Fraser, who's a left-hand shooting guy, Peluso, Thorburn. if you can't have any of those guys in your top nine. I know last year they had to have them for periods of time because of injuries. But if you have that without injuries, imagine what happens when you have injuries.
Right. And injuries are, you know, are a separate issue altogether. Because, I mean, when you're slotting everything out and you're planning for your best case scenario, you're never really, you know, planning best case scenario with injuries. You're saying, you know, and if it has to happen where somebody has to come up in the lineup for a game or two games or 10 games because of injuries, so be it. That's something that you have to roll with the punches throughout the course of the season. But, you know,
Is it Joel Armia? Like, I mean, people keep talking about Joel Armia like they know anything about him.
We don't. I mean, I don't know. I can't say if it is Joel Armia. I have trouble believing it would be. I have trouble believing it's anybody besides Nikolai Ehlers.
No, Drew,
at least in the minds of the Jets brass.
Just quickly here, you know, on the topic of Ehlers' comments, I mean, you got to also realize that there's a good chance that the reason why he's saying this is that shows you how badly he wants to make the NHL, first of all. It doesn't necessarily mean that this is some, don't read too much into it. I think that's really what the context of these quotes were. I know we're taking it a little bit into, you know, what if he doesn't make the Jets rich? And I think also there's a chance that if he doesn't make the Jets, he plays in the QMJHL because that's what the Jets want.
Well, we don't know what the Jets want.
And also, let's not talk about the issue here. Another issue here is money.
Sure.
Let's be honest here. What are you getting paid in the QMJHL? Nothing. A little per diem. And you're getting paid big bucks over there.
He goes to play in Switzerland. He makes probably very similar to what...
Austin Matthews.
Thank you. The name escaped me for a second. What Austin Matthews
probably
is making.
Well, it doesn't hurt that the 2016 number one prospect is in Switzerland. When you see him sign, that doesn't hurt, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt that they pay cash.
Yeah. Tax-free cash.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not, we're not comparing apples to apples here. If they're, you know, the development process, he's not going to go, if both leagues are paying, if the QMJHL were paying, for example, I'm sure this wouldn't be much of a discussion. And I'm not saying, oh, it's all about the money. But, I mean, it's like anything. We're going to talk about ads on jerseys later. It's always about the money.
Yeah.
It's not a factor.
It's business. It's just what it is.
The way it is.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Lee Stempniak's comments. And we'll look at the Jets roster. We'll talk about what Ken Weeb broke down there. And we'll talk more about the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now across to Trouba, who's going to step in there. Trouba steps in, shoots, answers, and winner scores! Mistake burying that. Fasten your seatbelts. The chat is taken off.
We have liftoff.
Lee Stempniak scoring in game 3 of last year's playoffs. The first goal scored at home for the Winnipeg Jets 2.0 in a playoff game. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Yeah, and I should mention, Drew, our boy Sotch, who obviously listens every week, was wondering what we were talking about last segment, how Ehlers can get paid if he's under contract with the Jets, so maybe we want to explain that.
Well, how he gets paid by the other team?
By a Swiss League team, you're saying?
Right.
Well, he won't be getting paid by the Jets because his entry-level contract won't yet kick
in. I think Sotch's question was, how could he get paid by another team if he's still under contract with the Jets?
Well, I mean, his contract, they have him under an entry-level deal, which kicks in once he... plays in the NHL.
It's sort of in a holding pattern until he begins his career.
What happens? It's called a slide. It can slide over next year, and then when you're 20, and then the options are AHL or NHL. Now, of course, it's like Bermistro. When you go overseas, technically, he's under contract with the Jets, or they retain his rights.
Yeah.
Same idea, similar idea, but he's free to sign wherever he wants. So if he were to come to the National Hockey League, that would be or the AHL. That's what his contract would be. But he's free to go elsewhere and receive whatever money that he wants.
Yeah. It's more that they hold on to his rights as opposed to actually have him own his rights, I guess, for lack of a better word. Lee Stempniak, you know, speaking earlier this week, you know, a lot of chatter, and we've talked about it on the show, about, you know, we were a little surprised that, you know, the Jets didn't seem to want to bring back Lee Stempniak, and he sort of confirmed that earlier this week with the following comments, talking about the playoffs. There was white everywhere, sold out, standing room only for warm-ups. It was electric. The fans were awesome. They're always great, but they took it to another level. Even before that, we had clinched a playoff spot on the road and played our final home game against Calgary. We had a standing ovation throughout warm-up, and all throughout the game you just had chills coming on the ice. Talking about his fit with the team, I thought it was a good fit personally. Very good team, great place to play. You can't beat that atmosphere there. Continuing on, I was hoping to go back to Winnipeg, but from what my agent told me, they were looking to give some spots to young guys. They have some very good prospects that they were looking to give some ice time to. I don't think we ever fully closed the door on it, but at this point, if I had to guess, it doesn't look too promising. So that's Lee Stempniak talking, I believe, earlier this week in Toronto about his desire to come back to Winnipeg and it apparently not being a two-way street. No surprise at this point in time, because if the Jets wanted him back, it's apparent that a deal would have been done. But, I mean, do you question that decision to not bring another player in, like Lee Stempniak?
I mean, I do, Drew, and you could say, okay, you could bring somebody in on a PTO and then kind of see what comes of that and have no commitment financially. But at the end of the day, if you're paying Lee Stempniak $800,000 or $1 million, and he absolutely gets outplayed by many youngsters, well, then you can deal with eating that contract after the fact. You know, whether that be sent into the minors, if he were to make it through waivers and you have to eat that money. I think creating internal competition is important. I think when the discussion we had last segment places undue pressure on young players to perform. Even if they know they have a spot, I mean, you say, okay, they know they have a spot, they'd be more comfortable. Well, they still know they have to be at a certain level. Like, they're not outperforming anybody. And I think it's a kind of a different kind of pressure in that case. In that, if you have Lee Stempniak playing here and you say, okay, he'll be the default top nine right, third line right winger. If you want to have one of these, you know, say Ehlers plays the right side, which I think could be helpful, though I have to see him more to fully comment on that. He thinks, okay, I got to outplay, Lee Stempniak here, and maybe he does, and the team says, okay, but still, you know, we need to be patient with you. You've outplayed him right now, but let's see what happens when the real games start. And slowly, maybe he passes them in the depth chart, and then Lee Stempniak becomes your fourth line right winger. And then you say, oh, well, what about Thorburn and Peluso? Well, what about Thorburn and Peluso? You know, I mean, I'm not saying that they can't be effective players in some sense, but, or you can flip a guy like Stempniak or Thorburn played the left side last year. So what it does is it gives you options. I think it insulates some of the young players. I think it probably takes away a question mark about a guy like Bermistra, which you're not sure what you're going to get and where he's going to succeed. I think it protects you from injuries as well. So, I mean, you have a bunch of these guys on two-way con, and I know Ken is in the projections has, for example, Brendan Lemieux on the fourth line left wing. Well, there are players down in the AHL that may have to, you know, tear it up here for Manitoba Moose until such time as they deserve a call. And so you have an AHL player to fill that spot in the meantime. I don't think the forward group is good enough right now to not bring in one more veteran, even just for the purposes I discussed. I don't know.
Interesting. Here's an interesting quote or an interesting comment from Dennis Bayak's article on TSN.ca.
Yeah. By the way, I'm not sorry, quickly before you say that. I'm not saying it has to be Lee Stempniak.
No, no. I know you're saying any player.
Yeah. There are other guys who play different roles who might actually be better than that. Sure. Who I'd prefer, but it's just a veteran forward who's played in the NHL for many years.
Right. You know, equal time to a different opinion. Here's Dennis Bayak. And this is from his TSN.ca article. Having openings is a good thing for the young players in the system, as well as players that choose to sign with the Jets this offseason. For prospects like Nick Petan and Nikolai Ehlers, and there are others, summer workouts are much easier when you know there is a spot or two open. Go back 1 year and ask Adam Lowry how much easier it was heading to the gym every day, knowing you were going to be given the opportunity to be an NHL regular.
But Adam Lowry played a year in the AHL and already had a year pro, so they were in the second year of his entry-level deal. No matter what, he already burned a year of his entry-level deal. And so rarely, unless you're Detroit, really, you have, or sometimes LA, you burn 2 years of entry-level deal developing in the minor leagues. And so it's different in the case of Nikolaj Ehlers, who has a year left, and Nick Batan, who hasn't played in the AHL yet. So I get Dennis's point for sure, but I think we're comparing apples and oranges there, Drew.
And it's clear that the Jets are going to give many young forwards, specifically. I think Josh Morrissey, we'd agree, is the only young defenseman, really, that has a shot at cracking the lineup. But you're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers, as you mentioned, Drew. You're talking about Nick Petan. You're talking about Brendan Lemieux. Throw in Joel Armia in there. Throw in Andrew Kopp. I'd probably say those five. There's five forwards that have a shot to play in the bottom six, and I would bet money on two or three of those guys probably filling roles throughout the year. And when you talk about Lee Stempniak, is this kind of a youth movement? I would say it is. And look, I think Lee Stempniak is a great player. I think when the Jets acquired Lee Stempniak, after they acquired Jiří Tlusty, I was a lot more excited about Lee Stempniak than I was about Jiří Tlusty, and he delivered. He had 10 points in 18 games. He scored the first playoff goal in Jets 2.0 history. If you remember back the third or fourth last game of the season versus Vancouver, he had two goals for the Jets. He got some big goals for the Jets down the stretch there. And was it a question of the Jets wanting to go younger and cheaper, Richie? Most likely. I didn't think that the Jets were ever going to bring Tlusty back, but I thought Stempniak was going to stay for many of the reasons that Richie just mentioned. He's a veteran that insulates the younger forwards, and he can score. I mean, the guy has a proven track record, whether it was with the Calgary Flames or the Toronto Maple Leafs or whoever. This guy, he might be a journeyman at this point in his career, but he liked playing in Winnipeg. And I'm not surprised at all, Drew, by those comments that you read, because he said all of these things during the season, and all of the indications, not only what he verbalized, but the indications were he was a guy that liked playing here. He's played in Canadian cities mm-hmm. before. He knows all about the pressure. He's American, obviously, and the Jets have a lot of Americans. It just, the fit was there, and he delivered. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they traded for him and for the Rangers, and he came over and he delivered. So I am a little bit surprised that they didn't sign him, but not surprised because it's clear that the Jets are going younger this year. And you know, I think Nikolaj Ehlers and is for sure going to be given probably. No, I shouldn't say he's going to be given. I think he maybe has a better shot at making it because of his skill set. And then when you talk about Andrew Kopp and Nick Petan and Joel Armia, I think it really depends, guys, how these guys play in training camp. I mean, that's why training camp exists and preseason exists. Whoever earns their spot has earned it because of the way they've played. And I don't think you can really pencil in too many players right now. I know you mentioned Brendan Lemieux. I mean, great bloodlines, just like Adam Lowry, and the guy is feisty, and maybe he'll surprise some guys, and you know, he'll hit. And
so what happens if you have an injury, though?
Well, that's a good point, Richie. I mean, you don't. The reason why the Jets went out and got Jiří Tlusty and Lee Stempniak was because they needed more scoring, essentially, in their bottom six, mm-hmm. right? And they weren't getting it from, you know, guys like Matt Halaschuk and the like, and they obviously had to use Adam Party at times on mm-hmm. the fourth line. They didn't want to do that. So now you don't sign those guys. If the Jets' young rookie forwards replace the offense of Lee Stempniak, Jiří Tlusty, Michael Frolik, then we're not having this conversation.
I think they can handle the Jiří Tlusty offense.
Well, yeah. Another point I want to raise here. I don't know if the Lions, I mean, I agree for the most part with Ken's projections, and Ken certainly knows what he's talking about. But we talked a lot last year about the identity of the team. Big, fast, physical squad. Mm-hmm. You know, Bogosian and Kane are gone, mm-hmm. okay, which they were obviously last year and in what, February when the trade happened, thereabouts. Bringing in Tlusty, Stempniak didn't make the team any more physical. Okay? I just wonder if you look at the projected third line that Ken has there, and I've probably come up with a similar one. Lowry in the middle, and then Burmistrov. Lowry's very physical. Burmistrov on the left side, who doesn't shy away from physicality. Mm-hmm. He's actually pretty strong on his skates, but he's not the most physical guy. And then, say, Ehlers, who, again, doesn't back down by any means. But is that the direction you want to go? Like, are you losing a bit of your physical identity? And Stafford isn't the most physical guy. Are you losing that speed, physicality, size identity by putting two smaller guys with a guy like Lowry? That's why I wonder if maybe the lines would be different. But you see what I mean? I mean, it's that contrast as
sure.
well.
I mean, for the first, you know, 50 games last year, yeah. people would see the Jets play for the first time, and they'd say, well, it's roller derby on ice. The Jets yeah. would hit everything that moved. then, you know, you lose Kane, and you, or you trade Kane and you trade Bogosian, and you replace him with Stafford and Myers, and you're definitely less physical. Just
yeah, and you're more skilled and more you're smarter.
Yeah.
But you're less physical, Drew, and I think the thing is, if you look at that second line, say Scheifele, Perreault, and Stafford, I mean, they're not going to be hitting many people.
Mm-hmm.
That first line can be physical. I know Wheeler and Ladd can engage, and Little won't back down, but he's not going to really totally engaged. But then you look at, say, Lowry. Like, are you losing a bit of that identity, what Paul Maurice is looking for? Now, I realize the defense can make up for that, but Enstrom is not very physical. Myers can be, but isn't really.
He more uses that long stick and his reach to his advantage opposed to physicality.
And Trouba and Byfuglien both are. And Stewart is. But you know what I mean? Like, are you losing a bit of that? Maybe you, and I guess what I'm talking, you talk about Stempniak as a free agent. Maybe we're talking about bringing in a guy who's a little bigger, brings a different edge.
Mm-hmm.
And can play different positions than the right side. Maybe a center wing guy. And I know there really aren't that many guys available when you look at the list, but there are players available I think could help on a cheap 1-year deal. And the worst comes to worst is if you really are blown away, you let the guy go and you eat the money. It's not a big contract. I mean, we're talking, this organization has big money. They're not going to be a cap team.
Right.
So, and that's personally how I would handle it.
We will see how the next few weeks develop and unfold as we head into training camp. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking about the business of sport. Advertising on jerseys, we'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Props to Corey for playing that song, by the way.
Well, you requested it, so yeah, and he comes through in the clutch for you all the time.
It's really appropriate with these jerseys because it has to be about the Benjamins.
It is.
It's not about anything about, you know, design or selling jerseys.
It's all about the Benjamins.
Yeah.
An article on TSN.ca earlier this week from senior correspondent Rick Westhead, who continues to do tremendous work, talking about how Adidas has won a long-term contract to make uniforms for the 30 NHL teams beginning in 2017-2018. The contract apparently is going to be worth the contract is going to be worth, I believe, $70 million per season, which is double from the current $35 million per season. But more importantly than that is the idea that this contract or this new relationship with Adidas might be the precursor to advertising being placed on NHL jerseys.
Is it about the Benjamins or the Robert Bordens?
That's a good point. For those who don't know, Robert Borden is on the $100 Canadian bill.
It's very good that both of you knew that. I'm impressed. You must obviously have too many $100 bills just kicking around the house there, Richie.
Wikipedia is a...
Wikipedia?
A hell of a site.
Anyways, so it's, Rick Westhead...
Well, Drew.
Go ahead.
Are we shocked that the NHL is picking money?
No.
Over the... this is what the thing...
We shouldn't be at this point.
Don't ever get mad at players when they go for the money. I mean, you can point it out as an opinion, and that's fine. But don't ever get mad at the players for going for the money, because the owners go for the money at any chance they can get. For some reason, people generally don't criticize them for those decisions. I mean, you're not going to see massive amounts of money from these jerseys offset by lowered or restricted ticket prices. Okay, so it's fine. So be it. But, you know, the jersey's sacred. I agree, and Drew, you're going to see it's over time, we've been doing the show that I used to get upset about this stuff, and I do believe they're sacred, and I believe it'd be ridiculous to have advertisers advertising on jerseys, but I'm just not surprised. We're talking about a National Hockey League that is talking about expansion. They haven't watched any games, obviously. They're talking about expansion when there's teams that have 5,000 fans in the stands, and the talent level on the teams does not necessitate more
players.
46 more players in the National Hockey League. So when you look at it, I'm just not surprised. You know, and unfortunately, I'm not surprised and I'm disappointed, but that's the way it goes. It's going to be money talks.
That's the thing, Richie. We could sit here all day and complain about the fact that our sacred Winnipeg Jets and Montreal Canadiens and Toronto Maple Leafsters, I would never wear a Leafs jersey, by the way, just making a point here, but all of the NHL jerseys are going to have advertising on it and how we don't like it, but there was a time and place when there wasn't advertising on the boards, and you used to watch hockey 40 years ago, and you know you didn't see Gatorade and all of these different companies. So if we complain about it, is that going to change anything? No. But I think it's going to change, really, jersey culture, if anything. Jerseys are not going to be as authentic, I think, when there's advertising all over the jerseys. It's going to take away. It's a sacred thing, right?
Well, you're wearing a soccer jersey right now in studio. Right. And what's the biggest thing you can see on that soccer jersey? It isn't the name of the team.
Well, no, it's
Carling Beer.
Right. I'm wearing a Celtic soccer. Well, because it's radio, Drew, nobody's going to be able to see my jersey.
Well, you were periscoping before the show.
That's true. You were periscoping.
It's a Celtic soccer jersey, and, and Carling is the sponsor, the beer sponsor.
But if somebody saw you on the street, they could clearly see that you're wearing a jersey, but they think the team name is Carling. They wouldn't think the team name is Celtic necessarily.
A point of note is that without a partnership between the NHL and the NHLPA, meaning tying revenues to salaries, the players would have no incentive to go along with this.
Sure, but now, I mean, you know, Blake Wheeler's comments, and you know, I'll say him. You know, Blake Wheeler, this is when he heard about the story. Quote: "An NHL uniform is a sacred thing, and it's an honor to wear one. Putting corporate sponsors on the front would tarnish that. Don't do it." I don't know if he's okay with putting corporate sponsors on the back.
I mean,
but
I respect his comment. I agree with his comments. But again, Drew, overall, Don Ophir is going to be for this. Why? Because if the league gets more money, then the players get more money. Before, when they weren't tying revenues to salaries, then the league was just getting more money and the players had no incentive to go along with it. I mean, theoretically, teams would spend more, but they didn't have to and they could just pocket it. So that's you talk about the cap being a good thing, but also it ends up not being such a good thing.
Right, and that was a tweet, Drew.
Yeah.
And it got 8,000. I retweeted that. It had 8,000 retweets, and that just shows you that most fans of the game are on the same side as Blake Wheeler, and Blake Wheeler is definitely not the only player that feels that way. But ultimately, as Richie mentioned, the NHL and the NHLPA are going to go through with this, or already have decided to go through with this.
No, they haven't officially decided.
It's a foregone conclusion. And the only real good news about this, unless you really like those European-style jerseys with a lot of advertising, or the Spengler Cup, or any other real NASCAR has a lot of advertising, soccer, you could throw in there too. Mm-hmm. I would hope, the only good news is that we have two more years where we know that there isn't going to be a lot of jerseys, a lot of advertising on the front of the jersey.
CFL jerseys have a lot of advertising on
CFL,
them as well.
I know, it's a different... They don't have much money. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars here. We're talking about a league that's trying to make something for the players who are getting paid, you know, regular people's salaries, for the most part. I mean, this is like... I mean, the Montreal Canadiens with an ad for Blank Company on the left shoulder, I mean, that doesn't take away from the sanctity of the uniform. I can't get around. But at the same time, again, they're trying to expand the league. Like, have they watched some of the games that have happened? Have they? Have they seen 4,000 fans? Like, it's all about money, expansion fees. And those, by the way, are not shareable.
Right. That's why the NHL is asking for $500 million from a team in Quebec and a team in Las Vegas, supposedly. I can't imagine. $500 million in Quebec? Pardon me, in Las Vegas? Quebec, I can understand. That money blows my mind. But, you know, you're right. It's just the next natural course of progression when it comes to this league.
Like, as he talks about
sports leagues.
As talks about ads on the boards, you watch those broadcasts where they have ads on the glass behind the net that is, like, not really in sync with the glass behind the net. It's moving around all the time. Yeah, I mean, that is getting in the line of vision, I think, in terms of a fan's enjoyability of a game.
In terms of watching it at home, especially, they superimpose it over there and everything else.
For the television stations, money talks as well. I mean, they're not.
Are you surprised that the NHL, putting it up with the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL, are you surprised that the NHL is the first one to go down this route and seemingly going to be the first one to have advertising on their, you know, practice or take practice jerseys out of the equation, but going to be surprised that the NHL is the first professional sports league in North America to have it on the players' regular jerseys.
Batman's trying to be the first to Vegas, the first there. He's trying to carve out, I think, his legacy, to be honest, and get money for the owners. So I'm not really that surprised. And the NFL really doesn't need it.
Yeah, but that's never stopped the NFL from taking it.
But I'm saying, no, that's true. It doesn't mean they're not next, and they can use the NHL as a pilot project.
The NFL is going to get gazillions. Somebody will actually pay them gazillions of dollars for advertising on the jerseys.
And guys, even though I would rather not see advertising on the front of jerseys, I think when it eventually comes in, we're just going to get used to it. And a couple years into jerseys having advertising on the front, we're not going to be having this discussion. But right now, because, as Richie mentioned, you're talking about how sacred, for example, a Montreal Canadiens jersey is, because it's a Original Six franchise,
mm-hmm.
you know, putting blank company on it and, you know, putting it all over. I just hope that it doesn't completely cover the jersey like some of the European jerseys, because then really, for me, all the jerseys look the same.
Oh, yeah, watch. They'll have it big. Oh, we don't put too many advertisements on the jerseys. We'll put enough to make $4 million, but not to make, you know, it's at
it's a
point,
slippery slope. Once you put one ad on, you're eventually going to have the entire thing just be an ad.
They're basically selling the league. It's like us having a show and like, this sentence is brought to you by Moro Zapia. Yeah. And that sentence is, and like, how much more are you going to sell? Like, there's times for commercials and times for selling things, and there's times to talk about to talk content. And it's like hockey. Let them play. No ads on jerseys. And then you can advertise everywhere else after.
Sure, because nobody ever complains anymore. I mean, I don't remember what it was like before when the first ads appeared on the boards. I don't remember if there was an outcry about it.
But that I can understand. And it's not on the player.
Sure.
I mean, you're talking about leagues that like fine players for not wearing hats that are in line with the rules of the national, or I mean, at least in
the NFL, their uniform policies are ridiculously stringent.
That's when they're not even on the field.
Yeah.
And Rich, it goes back to what you were saying before. It is the times that we live in. It's an era of growth for the NHL. Now it's official that there is an expansion process with Quebec and Las Vegas. And it's about expanding revenue, just like the World Cup. Is about expanding not only the fan base but revenue streams for the NHL, and that's what it's all about. We're sometimes afraid of change, right? And that's what really I think your hardcore hockey fan who doesn't really need to have advertising on the jersey, they say, "Well, my favorite jersey, you're going to put a corporate logo on there? I don't want that." But that is a sign of the times we live in. That's the way I chalk it up.
You bought that soccer jersey, and you didn't have, did you have any qualms about doing it with a big beer advertiser on it?
But what does it mean to him? It's just a soccer jersey. I mean, it doesn't have a meaning to him as a hockey team would have. Right? I mean,
fine.
If you're that hockey fan.
I assume it means something to a huge Celtic fan.
Right, that's true. Drew, in Europe, it's kind of that different mentality there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think that here you don't have it. And I appreciate your point, but here you don't have it. This many people are opposed to it, but it doesn't matter when there's money on the line. When they sniff a few dollars, they're going to pocket it. The league doesn't care. I mean, remember Bettman's promises of the first lockout, ticket prices. That's all a bunch of garbage.
Sure.
I mean, what's your regular ticket price now? Yeah. I mean, you know, the new NHL deal? Did they increase? You used to be able to get the NHL center rights and the online package. Now they're charging different prices for all of it. And, you know, it's better for the consumer because there's more money, more games available. Is it? And then you're charging, and then you have the new deal in the States where you get the single one team you get to watch for, I think, $100, and then, or two,
part of the class action lawsuit, yeah.
But then for every other team, it's only a few dollars more. I mean, they don't care about the fan. They care about making as much money as possible and then pretend to care about the fan.
Nothing is ever better for the consumer. I think that's really what it boils down to, you know, especially when it comes to professional sports and they come out with these new technological packages and new, you know, viewing experiences. Oh, it's better for the consumer. Nothing's ever better for the consumer. It's better for their own pocketbooks.
Like, what do you think of the NHL TV deal? How was that decided? It was decided by money. It's whatever money. It wasn't, you know, I've talked about it before. If we're talking about the consumer, Ezzy, you would want, like the NBA has and the MLB and NFL, competition amongst networks to produce the best possible product so the fans can enjoy it, and that is always ongoing. You know, can CBS do it better than Fox? Can Fox do it better than ESPN? Can NBC do it better than all three of them? Instead, the NHL sells it to one business and says, do whatever you want with it. And then there's no consistency. The broadcasts are all over the place. There's some there's a lot of talented guys. Some guys maybe not as talented. Everybody's working around. And they didn't care. They just said, okay, we'll sniff the money. So why would that change now?
Let's head to break. When we come back, the city of Calgary is trying to sniff the money as well for a new arena. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Big occurrences coming up in about 10 days' time. I believe it's the 1st or the 31st of August?
September 1st.
September 1st. So Tuesday, September 1st is the start of Burger Week in Winnipeg. And really, I think it's across the country, if I'm not mistaken. And Bernstein's Deli, of course, had a fantastic entry last year. And we've been provided with a bit of a sneak peek of the new entry that's going to be available starting on the 1st of September. And we're going to be sampling that in studio next week, but just to whet your appetite a little bit, it is a house-made bun with that's whole wheat with everything spice on it, so it's like an everything bagel almost.
Oh, Drew.
It's a sun-dried tomato and turkey patty. The sauce is a pesto mayo, and it's topped with goat cheese, roasted red pepper, and spinach. And the plate, for decoration and for showmanship, is sprinkled with a little bit of parsley. It sounds fantastic. There's pictures available on Ezzy's Instagram. What are you on Instagram? Are you Big Bad Ezzy?
I'll tweet that picture out, too.
Aren't you Big Bad Ezzy on Instagram?
No.
Not anymore?
I see Ezzy-G.
I see Ezzy-G on Instagram. Okay. Anyways, it looks fantastic. So you can get ready for Burger Week coming at the beginning of September. And, of course, check out Bernstein's Deli. In Calgary, where it snowed yesterday, so we can laugh at them about that, they've come out with an ambitious proposal for a new arena or a new professional sports complex, for a new arena and stadium for both the Flames and the Calgary Stampeders. $890 million is the price tag for that kind of complex. And that's on the low end of estimates. Some people project that after necessary infrastructure expenses are taken care of and there's a cleanup, an environmental cleanup of the proposed land in question, the entire project cost would be closer to $1.6 billion for a new stadium and a new arena in Calgary. The Flames ownership, which also own the Stampeders, the Calgary Hitmen, and the Roughnecks of the National Lacrosse League, have agreed to pony up a solid $200 million of the proposed either $890 million or $1.6 billion. Think that's going to get it done for the owners of the Flames and the Stampeders?
Is this really necessary?
Like that big of a price tag, you're saying?
Yeah.
Not in my mind, it isn't.
Like, I know they're doing the CFL stadium under the guise that there's going to be track and field and different things that they can use it for. Maybe, with probably the Olympics in mind, really, Drew, in 2026.
Summer Olympics, you're saying?
Another kick at the can there.
Winter?
The Winter Olympics, 26,
yeah,
right?
But you don't need track and field in the Winter Olympics.
I appreciate they're going to get some money because,
sure,
you know.
Sure,
but
sure.
I'm talking about we could use it for this, we could use it for that, and that's why we want this. But a little overboard, no? And then Ken King's on the trail this week doing all the PR about it.
Well, this is the money quote from Ken King.
Yeah.
You know, he used to be heavily involved in the Flames organization. Now he's sort of in the entire corporation, the big umbrella of the organization.
I think thankfully for hockey fans.
Yes, he wasn't very good when he was the president of the Calgary Flames. Quote, this is on the order of New York, London, and Paris. If we're going to be a globally consequential city, this is the kind of thing that we want to contemplate. I know that personally, when I think of London, New York, and Paris, the next city that comes to mind is Calgary. I I think the price tag on this is ridiculous. And I appreciate that. I don't have a problem with some government funds going towards arenas and stadiums, because that would make me a hypocrite if I objected to it in Calgary, because I have no problem with what happened here in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But I do think that the project needs to be a reasonable project, not a $1.6 billion. I mean, that's a white elephant for $1.6 billion. I don't know what you're building for that amount of money that isn't going to be a little bit over the top of what truly is necessary in this day and age.
Kind of peculiar timing, too. I mean, the Alberta economy has had better times than right now.
Mm-hmm. It has. Oil is dropping rapidly.
It is, and you're asking for taxpayer money in a provincial environment that is not the same as it was, a few years ago. So, is this the right time to propose something like this? Government money, okay, it's to some extent true, but there are also other things that money can be put towards. And when you talk about the price tag that we're discussing here, I mean, you can say what you will about the Bomber Stadium, whatever it ended up costing.
And there's overruns and the repairs. Sure. And there's problems with the Bomber Stadium, but the value is pretty decent.
Yeah, and if you MTS Center, I mean, you know, it's certainly not the nicest arena in the league, but they're both good functional arenas. And what they cost combined? Under 400, right?
Under 400, yeah.
You're talking three times basically that much. I mean, is that necessary? I've been to the Saddle Dome. Eddie's been to the Saddle Dome.
I've been to the Saddle Dome, too.
You too. I like the Saddle Dome. I know they probably want to expand the lower bowl. It's kind of a smaller lower bowl. And yeah, sure, it's a little bit older, no doubt about it. And they have a lease, which they say they can terminate earlier. But, I mean, it's not a dire need.
I don't even have a problem if it is a dire need. But come up with an arena plan that doesn't cost you $1.6 billion.
Well,
if you come to me and say, for $500 million, we'd like to build a stadium and an arena, maybe $600 million.
But, like, Drew,
I can probably listen to that argument.
But this is like a downtown Calgary. The Saddle Dome's in downtown Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not like Winnipeg where they're moving it to downtown, trying to revitalize downtown. It's already in downtown Calgary.
Right.
They're going to have, apparently, Ezzy, they're going to have the same amount of seats that they have in the Saddle Dome. So are you driving any more business to the area than you were before?
Well, they're going to build it in a blighted area that will see some economic redevelopment.
I appreciate that. But you're already downtown. So how much of a benefit are you going to see from this, aside from more luxury boxes and more money in the private owner's pocket?
It's been proven time and time again in Canadian cities, in American cities, in European cities. If you want to talk about Brazil, which is hosting the upcoming Summer Olympics,
sure,
that the investment in arenas, stadiums, has zero economic benefit for the city. Not zero, but...
The payback is never full.
It's not a dollar for a dollar, Drew. So, you know, and, you know, again, I'm not saying this completely in a pessimistic way, but, I mean, there have been studies and articles and documentaries about this. I mean, building stadiums are very expensive. And you're right, Drew, we don't want to be hypocritical, and we're not trying to say that Calgary doesn't deserve it. But when you're talking about the amount of money, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, $890 million, with only $200 million of that coming from the owners. And then, you know, as you mentioned, they were talking about this ticket tax and community levy and all this. Ultimately, it will get built. And, you know, there's a new arena going up in Edmonton. And it's all about, as Richie mentioned, everything that goes with the new arena. In Edmonton, they're calling it the Ice District. And this Calgary Next plan is not just about the arena, because I think Richie is right. I think they do have aspirations for bringing the Winter Olympics back. Of course, 1988 was when they hosted the Winter Olympics. So you're talking about real estate that's going to be developed around there and an entire district. And not similar to what they're doing with the MTS Center, with the Shed District. So, but getting back to it, I mean, if we sat here and talked about are there better ways to spend money, and is this an astronomical amount of money? Sure. But as we know, governments don't usually spend money the way they should.
Well, and you're comparing it to the library and the money spent on the library there. I'm pretty sure at libraries, kids learn how to read, and then...
And they don't cost you anything to enter.
And then they use those, and they learn how to read, and then when they learn how to read, and they get a background in education and in different things, then they use that to get jobs, and that helps the economy, as opposed to buying beer from the rich billionaire owners. I just don't understand that comparison. Kane King's going on and strong. And obviously, they've planned this like a political campaign. You see him get out there.
Of course.
Oh, nauseating.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift to some on-ice activity and look at the Montreal Canadiens offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, I believe it's his last night in town, Steve Dillon. Tickets available, check it out, RumorsComedyClub.com. A few tickets available for Rob Schneider coming up at the end of September, so get on those real quick as well. Next segment, we're going to be talking to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette about the Habs and the offseason that they've had. Sort of been a quiet offseason for the Montreal Canadiens, and I'm a little surprised about that because I'm not 100% sure. I mean, look, this team has Carey Price. And as long as Carey Price is in their net for, you know, 60 or 65 games a year, they're going to be a good team because he's just that good of a goaltender. Mm-hmm. And they got P.K. Subban. And as long as P.K. Subban's in the lineup, they're going to be a pretty good team because he's just that good of a defender. But I'm not sure that the Habs are in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference, despite where they may have finished last season in the Eastern Conference. I'm not sure that they are ready to take the next step and be a Stanley Cup contender. And nothing they've done this offseason has made me change my mind.
So last year, Carey Price was basically Superman.
Yeah.
He wins the Hart Trophy. He wins the Vezina Trophy. He wins the William Jennings Trophy. He wins every trophy.
Yeah.
And you're right. He's the best goaltender
on the planet.
On the planet. And I think this year he solidified that, Richie. And I think, you know, you could throw in some other good goalies, but really this year that he had was maybe one of the best years we've seen since Dominic Hasek in the 90s. And you're right. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens, after going to the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago against the Rangers and almost going to the Stanley Cup Finals, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe they give the Kings a good run because they have Carey Price. Not that Lundqvist isn't a good goalie, but let's be honest here, Drew. The Montreal Canadiens struggled to score goals last year. They were in the bottom third of the league in goals scored. The power play wasn't good. And the power play has been something that was really always good for the Montreal Canadiens in recent years because, you know, you always had Andre Markov and P.K. Subban blasting shots from the point. But Carey Price really made up for that lack of offense, really. And, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that the offseason's been a little bit quiet. And I agree, you know, you made a trade to bring in Zach Cassian. So I think you get a little bit better offensively, a little bit younger. I mean, Zach Cassian's a guy that can mix it up. He can drop the gloves just like Brandon Prust. But I think we'd agree that he's, at this point in his career, he's got a little bit more of an offensive ability. Mm-hmm. So the other moves they make, bring in Alex Semin on 1 year contract. And even though I'm not the biggest fan of Alex Semin, he's a sniper.
The risk is worth it in that deal. It's a 1 year, $1.1 million deal.
Low risk, Drew. Yeah. And he has a proven track record of scoring goals. And so he immediately upgrades their secondary offense. I mean, you could even argue that he might be part of their primary offense. But look, you got to get goals.
I mean, let me just interrupt you for a second about Alex Semin. He got 6 goals last year. Now he's playing on a terrible team in a terrible situation in Carolina. Right. But you don't know what you're going to get out of him.
Alex Semin plays a full season and he gets on the power play, Rich. I mean, he could get back to 20-25 goals. Mm-hmm. I think we'd agree, right? I mean, at this point in his career, maybe he's not going to score 40 goals like he did, you know, back when he was with the Washington Capitals playing with Ovechkin and Backstrom. But, I mean, he's a guy that other teams wanted. And with Alex Semin, it's always been about his lack of effort and how bad he wanted it. And I remember when the Montreal Canadiens signed Alex Kovalev, you know, Alex Kovalev was pretty darn good with the Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. And given the scenario and given there's some other Russian players on the Montreal Canadiens, you're talking Emlyn, Markov, and mm-hmm. Galchenyuk, who's Russian-American. But I think the fit works there. And, you know, before Richie gets in here, I agree with you, Drew. I still think the Montreal Canadiens are a playoff team. I think they're a playoff team simply because they have the best goalie in the league and one of the best defensemen in the league. Right there, I mean, those two players on any team make them a playoff team. But this team, I think, wants more than that. And when you talk about some of the younger players on the team, like Galchenyuk and Gallagher, I mean, those guys have been carrying, I think, too much of the load. And they really haven't addressed enough that this isn't a big enough team. It's not a hard enough team to play against. Yeah. And I don't think they're as fast as they were a couple of years ago when they played against the Rangers. That was the big difference, Richie, was the speed. And you're always going to get the goaltending from Carey Price, but when you get in a seven-game series, there's a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference that I would take over the Montreal Canadiens right now. I would even take the Columbus Blue Jackets over the Montreal Canadiens because they have more offensive weapons and they're a harder team to play against. That's what I think it is. I think when you look at the offseason, you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, you say, okay, we got Alex Semin and, okay, Cassian, we'll see how he does on the third or fourth line, but are we going to get to the third round again? Are we going to get to the Stanley Cup Finals? Well, Carey Price is probably going to have to steal at least one of those series or two of those series again for them to do that.
Yeah, you know, you look kind of at their squad. I do agree with you guys. They're kind of moving sideways to an extent. I mean, they've still a lot of young guys. I think you're looking for internal growth from a guy like Alex Galchenyuk. You're hoping Brendan Gallagher gets better. Max Pacioretty's on a really reasonable $4.5 million contract for the next 4 years. You know, you've tried to get a little bit more, change the way you play, as you alluded to. You made the Sakic for Smith-Pelly deal last year. You get less skills, but I think more physical. Cassian, you probably get more skill than less physical than Press, but pretty physical still. Just not a really smart player, Cassian.
Falling out of favor in Vancouver. I mean,
sure. Now he's younger and he gets shot, and he can shoot the puck pretty good. You know, he's got a nice shot on him, and he's a little out there at times. But I mean, I still think they're a solid playoff team. Would you like for them to get better, bigger up the middle? Yeah, Pekanek and Desharnais and Eller being your third guy is actually a bigger guy. But Desharnais and Pekanek as your number one and two centers, it's tough to win when you're going up against, as you kind of alluded to it, you know, Stamkos and Tyler Johnson. Which is a problem. It's tough when you're going up against big time centers on the other squad, who are not only, you know, Tyler Johnson's not bigger, but he's better than those guys. And Stamkos is obviously both. So can they make a run? Sure. I mean, but would I pick him in those seven game series as he mentions? No. I mean, you have Carey Price. He's a wild card. And sure, the thing is, like, Semin could produce during the season. But am I counting on him to produce in the playoffs?
If you're counting on Alex Semin to really produce at all, especially when push comes to shove, when it's really the important time, he's never done it before.
Where are you getting better than last year? I mean, if Price performs 80% of last year, which would still be a great year, where are you getting better?
Sure, you're not.
Again, it has to be the internal growth and some of the free agents to add a little bit of spark, which is possible. But, I mean, it's certainly no guarantee. So you wonder if there's a bigger move in store here for the squad or not. I'm sure they were sniffing around a guy like Malkin. For sure, get bigger, more skill in the middle. I mean, I know he's one of the best players in the league. But that's their missing link, that big center who can play. And, I mean, you can have Tyler Johnson. We've proven in the National Hockey League, you can have a guy like Tyler Johnson, but you need to complement him with somebody who's a bigger, different player, right?
Right.
And they have... They've been too small in the middle for some time now.
Yeah, and maybe you're hoping at some point in time some of your first round picks, crack the lineup. I mean, you got a guy like Michael McCarron, but I mean, he was a late round first round pick a couple years ago.
I don't know anything about those guys, Drew. I know they like De La Rose, and I've only seen him play very little. I know they like how he's a pretty responsible player, mature player, and obviously they bring in Torrey Mitchell to kind of settle down those bottom lines there, but. The Jeff Petrie contract to me was also a bit of a reach. You know, you're paying him $5.5 million a year. I don't know. I'm not a big Jeff Petrie fan. I don't hate his game, but I thought that was an overpay before free agency even started.
Yeah. They acquired him at the trade deadline, and then obviously they targeted him as a guy they wanted to hold on to paying him that amount of money.
Having said this, I think Mark Bergevin's a sharp guy, and I'm not writing off this team by any means. I just don't think as they're currently constructed they're going to be a cup winner.
Rich, you mentioned the Jeff Petrie contract, and I think, you know, it's been talked about a lot
Yeah.
As far as the analytics go and how the analytics crowd didn't like the Montreal Canadiens because of their shot totals and everything like that. And, you know, I actually agreed with that because Carey Price was really making up for the lack of offense. But I also think what hasn't been talked about enough is that Carey Price was making up for the lack of foot speed on defense. And I think the Montreal Canadiens are a little bit top-heavy with PK Subban and Andre Markov. And giving Jeff Petrie $5.5 million, again, you know, nothing against Jeff Petrie, but I don't think we would say Jeff Petrie is a top 30, top 40 defenseman in the NHL. He's a good solid defenseman. We'll give you a little bit of offense. Yeah. You know, not the most physical, but he can be physical.
Yeah.
And,
that's fair.
You know, a guy like Nathan Beaulieu, you know, they kind of favored a little bit over Tenorti, who's a bigger guy. And Tenorti, you know, they have given him a chance, and he's had some injury problems and all that. I mean, the defense, there's some talent there, but it's not a rock-solid group like you would say the Rangers are, for example.
That's right.
Or the Tampa Bay. I mean, you see the teams that go far now in the playoffs, they have lots of depth on defense. And, I mean, even Chicago, who played four defensemen, essentially.
But their four are so much better than everybody else.
Right, and they had to get a guy like Kimmo Tiiminen, and then Van Riemsdyk got injured. But the point being that I think the Montreal Canadiens' defense is a concern there, and they don't have as much depth as they used to have because they've gone a little bit younger. And those younger defensemen, as we know, take a little bit more time to develop. Tenorti and Beaulieu are still young guys, and they're both physical guys. You know, we saw that with Beaulieu here in Winnipeg. He laid out a big hit. I think it was on Andrew Ladd, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, this team is still a very good team. It's a young team, as Richie mentioned. But I agree with you, Rich. I think internal improvement, you want to see more from certain players. You want to see more offense. Because after Max Pacioretty, after Thomas Plekanec, after Galchenyuk, I mean, they struggled to get goals from other players. You know, throw in Brendan Gallagher in there. A guy like Lars Eller didn't have a good year last year. So you want more from those guys. And, you know, a guy like Semin hopefully helps them out.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette to talk more about the Habs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Randall Plumbing and Heating. Since 1905, it has been an industry leader servicing the Manitoba market. For all your refrigeration, plumbing, and heating needs, commercial or residential, contact Randall Plumbing at 204-775-8406 or online at randallplumbing.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Montreal Gazette. He covers the Montreal Canadiens. Good friend of the program, Pat Hickey. Pat, good morning, and how are you?
I'm fine.
That's good. Pat, how's the good summer, good off-season so far?
It's been a great off-season. Playing a lot of tennis and basically enjoying life.
That's good to hear. Pat, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Habs, talk about their off-season. And we were just speaking about it last segment before we brought you on. It's sort of been a bit of a quiet off-season in Montreal. You know, not a ton of moves. They bring in Zach Cassian. They sign Alexander Semin. You know, are you surprised at sort of how quiet it has been in regards to roster moves for the Habs?
Not really. I mean, they have a pretty good vision of where they want to be. I mean, you got to remember, this is a team that finished second overall in the NHL this season. So they're pretty happy with the roster they have. The biggest move they made was just before free agency started. They re-signed Jeff Petrie, who they acquired as a rental, and they managed to convince him to stick around for another 5 or 6 years. And that was the big move as far as they were concerned. Shored up their defense. You got to remember, this is a team that can never have too many good defensemen. And they've got basically 7 or 8 guys who can play regularly in the NHL. And there's going to be some competition for the third defense pairing this year. So they're pretty happy with that move. They want to get a little bigger, so they added Cassian and Semin. These guys are both gambles. Cassian's a guy who has never lived up to his promise, but he's only 23 years old. They feel they can get some work with him. He's 6'4", 6'5", you know, that size that they don't have. Semin, with the exception of last year, is a 20-goal scorer. He's had a 40-goal season. Nobody in the Canadiens has that. He's got a couple of 30-goal seasons. And so they're hoping that he still has something left. He's only 31 years old. He's going to be motivated. He's got a one-year contract. It only cost him $1.1 million, bargain for a player of that caliber. And he'll be playing for another contract. So they expect him to be motivated. Now, you know, the question is whether, you know, that his problems are physical. He had wrist surgery a year ago before a pretty disastrous season down in Carolina. But they're hoping that things work out. There's a couple of things there that, you know, Semin was the only Russian in Carolina. He doesn't speak English very well. You know, it's functional, but he's not comfortable speaking it. He's coming into an environment where he's going to have three other Russian-speaking players, including Andrei Markov, who is, I'm sure they had Markov sign off on this deal before they got, before they decided to offer Semin a contract. And, you know, Markov will be counted on to make him feel comfortable in Montreal and to help him ease through any rough spots that he has. You also have Alexei Yemelin, and you've got Alex Galchenyuk.
Pat, you mentioned, you know, Alex Semin, which was obviously the big free agent signing for the Montreal Canadiens. And as you know, the Montreal Canadiens struggled big time offensively and on the power play. When you look at what they've done in the offseason, does that make you think that that's even more reason to believe that they're counting on internal improvement as far as getting the offensive totals up where it needs to be so they don't have to rely on Carey Price so much?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, although Michel Therrien points out they only scored 12 goals less than the Chicago Blackhawks during the regular season. You know, their offensive production was not great. You know, they had a lot of things they could have done better, particularly on the power play. And they hope that Semin, a right-handed shot, will help them in that respect. And, you know, 2 years ago, this is one of the better power plays in the league. And when you look at Andrei Markov out there, P.K. Subban, Max Pacioretty, it should be a lot better than it is. They were down the bottom third of the league in power play production, and they're hoping that Semin and or Cassian will help them, adding a couple of right-handed shots, but more importantly, guys with some size who can get in front of a goaltender. Right now, that job's being handled by Brendan Gallagher, who's a willing, he gets a lot of goaltender interference penalties. He's only 5'8", and they just need a bigger body in front there.
Pat, Alex Galchenyuk, we had talked about in the segment prior, and you had mentioned him. I know Mark Bergevin kind of raised some eyebrows when referring to him with regards to the wing on an ongoing basis. Do you see Galchenyuk eventually going back to the middle, or do you see him staying on the wing for a long period of time?
I can see him staying on a wing for a few years, a few seasons. Now, you know, these things change. You gotta remember, this is a coach in Michel Therrien who changes in the middle of this period. I mean, he changes things very quickly. He's not afraid to stick. If something he feels isn't working, he'll give it another shot. He's tried using Galchenyuk in the middle a couple of times. It hasn't really worked out. And he gives you 20 goals a season on the wing. He's only 21 years old. He's got lots of room to grow. So I think that, you know, they're going to be patient there. Again, talking about, you know, building internally, they've got two guys who will be starting the season in St. John's, which is their new home base for their AHL team, and Nikita Sherbak and Michael McCarron. And they have high hopes for both these guys. Again, you got two guys with size and some skills, and they're hoping that in another year or two, I'm sure they'll be up at some point during the regular season for a look-see, and maybe like Jacob De La Rose last year, they'll stay up. But these are guys they're counting on in the future.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette discussing the Habs and their offseason. Pat, one of the things that really hasn't got a lot of chatter this offseason is Max Pacioretty. He was injured about a month ago, a little more than 5 weeks ago now. He said that he was going to be out for 12 weeks or he need 12 weeks of recovering for the knee injury. You know, I don't know if you've got any update on how he's progressing from that, but, you know, is there any sort of concern in the Habs front office that, you know, this injury might affect Pacioretty, might linger into the start of the regular season?
I don't think so. I think they expect him to be ready. They think that he might miss a week, although the latest reports are that that he's ahead of schedule and coming back. This is a guy who's had a number of serious injuries during the course of his career, most notably the broken neck and the concussion when he got hit by Zdeno Chara. But this is a guy that bounces back from injuries pretty quick. He's a quick healer. He's always been known for that, and they expect him to be ready. Now, whether this affects the way he plays, one of the knocks against Pacioretty is he's not a really physical player for a guy his size, that he tends to be on the outside a little more, and they'd like him to be more of a power forward type. But, again, they're getting 37, 38 goals from him, and you know, that's a lot more than they're getting from anybody else. So they're not really, they're worried. They're just hoping that the knee is stable when he starts playing again.
Pat, you mentioned Jeff Petrie earlier, who signed the big contract, making $5.5 million a year. You were talking about the Habs defense last segment, and one of the guys, to me, that's gotten squeezed out a little bit, and we were a little bit unclear about his future, is Jared Tenorti, and that's with Nathan Beaulieu getting the two-year contract. I guess Jared Tenorti was always a guy that they traded up to draft him back in 2010, and he was always going to be that kind of big physical defenseman that they always needed. But where do you see him fitting in next year?
I see him fitting in the top pairing in St. John's, Newfoundland. it's one of the things that guys have passed him. Beaulieu has passed him. I think, you know, they thought in the beginning that Beaulieu was going to be the offensive guy who was a little soft, and Tenorti was going to be the big physical guy. And Tenorti has been the big physical guy, but his skating hasn't improved to a large degree. He's willing to fight, but he loses most of the fights because he doesn't know how to fight. He gets hurt a lot. He thinks he's a boxer, and hockey fights involve more wrestling than anything else. You grab the guy's jersey, and then you hope to get a couple of punches in. He throws these big haymakers, but he leaves himself wide open. And as a result, he's had one eye injury in a fight. He's had a concussion as a result of a fight. Quite frankly, his stock has gone down, and he's got to have a great camp to even stick around. He's fallen behind Greg Pattern, who's played very well and has just signed a 2-year extension. He's got 3 years and a 1-way contract, and Tenorti's still working on a 2-way deal.
Pat, how much of the contract given to Jeff Petrie was as a result of the Habs' happiness with him? Or was it more as a result of the fact that the free agent crop of defensemen really wasn't that strong this year?
Well, I think it was a case of the Habs being happy with him and him being happy with the Habs. I think it was a two-way deal. I mean, this is a guy who figured to be one of the most attractive free agents out there. I think Mike Green was rated as the number one available defenseman, but I'd take Jeff Petrie over Mike Green any day, just from a defensive point of view. So, you know, you have a situation where I don't think they thought they had a chance to keep him. They brought him in as a rental. They figured he'd be very high on the free agent market. But from the very day he arrived in Montreal, he was happy there. Coming from Edmonton to Montreal, it makes a big difference. But, for example, he had a chance. I'm sure that the Detroit Red Wings, who were looking for defense, would have been happy to give him a contract. That's his hometown. Sometimes you have problems with American guys, coming to Montreal. But in this case, he was very happy, very comfortable here. His wife was very comfortable. That's important. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, sometimes wives come to Montreal, and because of the language problem and things like that, you don't want to get involved in that situation. But they were very happy there, and so it worked out quite well. He's going to be playing on, I'm sure that the way they have it set up, he's going to be on the number one defense pair with P.K. Subban, and the second pairing is going to be Andrei Markov with Nathan Beaulieu.
Interesting. And Pat, when you look at this team and moving forward into next season and some of the same issues that they faced, one of the things that Brandon Prust brought to the table, at least when he was signed from New York and Mark Bergevin was trying to kind of change the culture, was that leadership in the room and the physicality. He obviously, he played such a physical style in Calgary, New York, Montreal. He seemed to be wearing down. Was there a leadership kind of passing of the baton that happened in the past couple of years that the Habs felt comfortable enough moving Prest?
Yeah, I think they feel comfortable with, they had four assistant captains last year. They didn't have a captain. And you had a leadership group, which also included Carey Price, who did not have a letter, and a guy that, by the end of the season, a lot of people were thinking should be the captain, and Brendan Gallagher. So you've got a lot of young guys who have stepped up and assumed the leadership role, and I think that made it easier for them to get to drop trade Prust. I think they liked what he brought to the room. There was also concern, though, that he was slowing down, just the way he plays hockey, and I think that's got to be a concern in the long run for Brendan Gallagher, for example. These guys keep getting pounded year after year, game after game, and it's going to take a toll. And I think that was the case with Brandon.
Pat Hickey covers the Montreal Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. He's a frequent guest on this program. Pat, appreciate your time this morning, and we'll let you get back to your tennis match.
Anytime, guys. always have time for you guys.
Thanks, Pat. Take care of yourself.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Before we go to break, get your dialing fingers ready, 204-780-1290. We're going to give away a pair of tickets to Puck Talks Winnipeg, real hockey stories for real hockey fans. It's a panel discussion. It's going right across the country, Tuesday, September 15th, 780-1290. Caller number 3 right now. Richard Pollock will be a panelist there, so you can check that out, 780-1290, Puck Talks Winnipeg. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big congratulations to Calvin Moore. He has won the Puck Talks Winnipeg tickets. Again, that event coming up on the 15th of September. We'll be in touch with Calvin accordingly. Tickets given away every week here on Illegal Curve up until the event. So if you didn't win today, stay tuned next Saturday. We'll give away tickets again. And, of course, you can just purchase your tickets right now, pucktalkslive.com, to go check out that great event upcoming.
I got to say, it's nice to see Richie P on that poster. It's going to be at the Pint. We'll be there. I'll be having a few pints with Richie. It's going to be good times.
Yeah, it's a great list of speakers and guests and everything else. So check it out, pucktalkslive.com. And in about 10 minutes' time, actually, we'll be joined by the founder of Puck Talks to talk about the event a little bit more. Some RFAs still on the market as we are here on the 22nd of August. And the Jets, in fact, have an RFA, but nobody seems to be paying any attention to that. That's John Elbert. And I think that might say something about John Elbert's future NHL bona fides, but... something or another will eventually resolve itself there.
Why don't we break down the John Elbert contract?
I think we'll take a pass on that one.
And jokes aside, I mean, you're talking about guys who have been kind of impactful players and on their National Hockey League squads.
Yeah,
John Albert's been a good contributing member to this with St. John IceCaps before this year, and of course, what he scored. Didn't he score a goal in his first game at
MSG? Yeah.
He did, yeah.
So that was a nice little
With
story
due respect,
there.
But yeah, so let's focus on what Marcus Kruger.
Marcus Kruger first up on the Chicago Blackhawks. And, Marcus Kruger is a guy who doesn't get a lot of headlines, and a lot of people might not notice him very often. He's sort of the fourth line center
in
Chicago. But he's a key cog to that team. Mm-hmm. And we've spoken about that before with Scott Powers of ESPNChicago.com, our frequent Blackhawks contributor to the program. That's a guy, Marcus Kruger, who's means a lot to that Blackhawks team and is going to be looking for a raise from the, I believe it was $1.5 million he made last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a contract that still hasn't really... 1.3, sorry,
1.325. 1.4 money, 1.325
cap hit. That's a guy, still young. Still with an upward trajectory when it comes to his career.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Blackhawks are certainly a team that's got, they only have $230,000 in salary cap space.
Oh, that's the reason why we're talking about this.
Right. So that's going to be interesting to see how the Blackhawks are able to resolve that.
That's
the
only reason
weeks.
He has not been signed is because they don't have the salary cap room. And Drew, you mentioned that, he might be a little bit underrated. Certainly, I know how good he is from watching the Chicago Blackhawks a lot. He's got two Stanley Cups, and he's their fourth-line center, and he can play a variety of roles. Good penalty killer, good on the face-offs. chip in a little bit of offense. I know his offensive totals dipped a little bit last year from the previous year, but he's a guy that right now, going back to what we were talking about last week, I think they'd love to trade a guy like Brian Bickle, who's making $4 million, or a guy like Chris Versteeg, who I believe is making around $2 million. I don't have it in front of me here.
Versteeg is making $2.2 million.
Right.
Bickle's making $4
million. Right, and those are the two guys that I think Stan Bowman was trying to trade, but it's unfortunate for Marcus Kruger because, as you mentioned, they've only got, what, a couple $100,000 in cap space right now, but he's a guy that you'd think would be under contract by this point because you got training camp coming up in about 3 weeks. But what do you do? I mean, you almost think that there might be a situation where another team might try to swoop in there.
Well, the first thing, Ezzy, is I think we should note that he didn't declare arbitration.
Right.
When you have the ability to do so. So certainly wants to stay in Chicago. Now, J.P. Barrie is his agent, and he's been saying, you know, he's kind of willing to wait it out. Now, I mean, there's only so long you can wait it out.
Yeah.
At the same time, is there another team that's going to try and acquire his rights? I don't know if he's that interested in going to, you know, to another team, because why wouldn't he have just declared arbitration and forced the Blackhawks' hand at that point, right? Now, the problem is isn't there, I believe there's a rule against trading post-arbitration. I have to look at the CBA. I forget whether or not that's the case or not.
Because you're not allowed to walk away from an award, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I forget what the rule is on that. But I just think he's going to eventually sign once they... Now, the thing is this, right? We haven't mentioned the Patrick Kane factor is an issue here.
Well, sure.
Do you get cap relief if he's, you know, that's obviously, we don't know if any of that is true or not. That's all, you know, that's all just been tossed out there. We have no clue. But I'm sure the team is thinking, well, hold on a second. Maybe there is cap space. What if we have an injury? Maybe there's cap space. We can find a way. Now, keep in mind, you can go over the cap in the offseason.
Yeah.
Just the Blackhawks are in a better position in terms of other teams.
Is it 24 hours before the start of the regular season, I believe?
Yes, I believe that's the rule.
Yeah, so they can go over, you know, and then deal with their problems. I mean, you know, if they sign him, you know, in September and it gets close to, you know, the start of the season, they might have to bite the bullet and give up an asset to get one of their contracts off the book to get him under there.
Right.
But he's certainly much more valuable to the Blackhawks than a guy like Versteeg or Bickle are at this point in their career. And the Blackhawks know that. And Marcus Kruger seems to be one of the rare athletes who realizes the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Well, I mean, he's been a team player here, guys.
Sure, very much so.
He's been a team player. I mean, sure, maybe he wants a long-term deal. But he could have said, hey, I'm going to go to arbitration. And now, granted, a player of his ilk is not very, not apt to make a ton of money in arbitration because he does the things that, as you mentioned, the little things. But at the same time, he would have at least got his $1 million and whatever it would have been, and a couple $1 million, and it would have been, okay, you figure out your cap problems. Mm-hmm. Like, so I mean, clearly there's a good relationship there. And J.P. Barrie can be a hard negotiator. So he's taking the instructions of his client, which is what his job is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like a pretty reasonable process thus far.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what happens there, because I think you're right, Richie. I think he has been a team player here, and you got to think that the Chicago Blackhawks want him back. Even though right now, I mean, you just don't have the salary cap room, so they have to move someone. Whether it's Bickle, whether it's Versteeg, those are the two most likely candidates. And a guy like Ryan Garbutt, good Winnipeg boy, obviously, he essentially will play the role that Brian Bickle was playing, right? So it's kind of remains to be seen, Drew. You'd think, okay, just find a way to sign him, right? Even though he's not as important of a piece as a Patrick Sharp, who they had to trade to Dallas because, again, it was a salary cap issue, right? And they shed some salary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unfortunate for Marcus Kruger because he's coming off another good playoff run. Again, a guy, as you mentioned, you're not going to see his name every night on the score sheet. But on a team like the Chicago Blackhawks, he plays that role really well. And as you mentioned, he's still young. He's got a lot of good years left on him.
They have another RFA in Joachim Lindstrom, Nordstrom, who certainly isn't as valuable to the Blackhawks, but he did get into 38 games and got into three playoff games last year. He's coming off a year in which he made just over $600,000. And, you know, again, when you only have $200,000 in cap room, every single dollar counts. And there'll be another one that's a little less interesting, but also worth watching. Moving to the New York Islanders, this is a guy you like, Richard, Brock Nelson. Last year had the $900,000 cap hit, and he's also an RFA waiting to get under contract.
Of course, Richie likes him. He went to UND.
Yeah, I mean he's a talented player. He's a big guy. He can move, good offensive skills. Not going to be the most physically imposing player, Drew. Very talented, though. I like Brock Nelson's game. Now, the difference between Brock Nelson and a guy like Marcus Kruger is that Brock Nelson's coming off his entry-level deal.
Right.
And therefore, he has no arbitration rights.
That's right. Then that's the big difference. But still nothing done there when it comes to that. But the Islanders have the cap space.
They have $8.6 million of cap space. I think this is the thing about the Islanders. I want to get into this a little bit. The Islanders are always going to want to sign you to a kind of a pretty reasonable second deal. You look at who they signed Anders Lee is 3.75. They had signed Josh Bailey. That kind of went a different way. Josh Bailey before Okposo's on a $2.8 million deal. Franz Nielsen, I mean, they've done a great job. I've mentioned on the show many times. And Hamonic's deal is a steal of a deal as well. Yeah. They've signed guys to very reasonable contracts for long term.
Sure.
So they're probably saying to Brock Nelson, we'd love to have you 4 years at $3.5 million or whatever it may be. And he's saying, well, hold on, I'd probably rather play 1 or 2 years and see what my arbitration. And that'll be my guess. But he's certainly part of the long-term plans. He can also play center and wing there. So I think that gets resolved. But I bet you it's in terms of the Islanders wanting to get great value like they have for so many of these players.
Yeah, Richie, you're bang on. And I think what's not helping Brock Nelson right now in his negotiations are that you've got a guy like Ryan Strom competing for ice time. Mm-hmm. You've got Michael Dalcol, who, you know, it remains to be seen if he makes the team this year. But you've got other young forwards coming up competing with him. And that's why you probably have this impasse, right, where he's asking for a little bit more. And the New York Islanders are kind of holding firm in their stance, right? They're saying, no, this is what we're going to give you. And he's asking for a couple $1 million more mm-hmm. over the term of the contract. But really good hockey player.
Yeah.
And I agree with Rich. I mean, we'll get into this, you know, when we get into training camp. But this Islanders team, I liked them a lot last year, and I think they obviously didn't go as far as I thought they would running into the Washington Capitals. But look at all of this young talent on defense; it's unbelievable. And
they played that series without Hamonic. Keep in mind.
Yep.
Yeah. One other one, RFA, Jonathan Huberto, of course, of the Florida Panthers. Similar situation to Brock Nelson in that he has no arbitration eligibility coming off his entry-level deal. 54 points last year, 15 goals, 39 assists, former third overall pick. So it took him, you know, in his third year, it seems like he's finally, not finally, I mean, he's really progressing the way the Panthers would hope.
I don't know what's going on with that one, Richie and Drew,
Hold on, let's two words you need to know before why that's going on. Allen and Walsh.
That's his agent?
Yeah.
It's a good point. I mean, he's not exactly, well, he was Michael Frolik's agent. We know how those negotiations went with the Jets, right? So for me, especially with Florida and the fact that last year, because they didn't make the playoffs, they started to trade away some of their players and, you know, Sean Bergenheim, guys like that, and, you know, Brad Boies won't be back. You kind of wonder, like, Jonathan Huberto seems to be a big part of that future, mm-hmm. along with the Alexander Barkovs and the Nick Bjugstads and Aaron Ekblad and all that. And you're right, Rich. It must be that they've taken a hardline stance asking for a certain amount of money. Because, again, it's similar because of that entry-level contract situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to give him a bridge deal? Does he want 5 or 6 years? I don't know if he's the type of player they want to sign to 7 or 8 years. He's a good, very good hockey player, but you know they'd probably be more comfortable offering that longer-term deal to a guy like Aaron Ekblad, who in his first year already looks like he's a future Norris candidate. So it's surprising to me, Drew. To me, I'm more surprised. I understand Marcus Kruger. They haven't signed him. They don't have the cap room. They got to move someone out to get Marcus Kruger. But Jonathan Huberto and Brock Nelson, even Huberto more so, he's a guy that, as you mentioned, he had a really good year last year on a team that doesn't have a lot of good offensive players. Why hasn't he been signed yet? Has to be because Alan Walsh is asking for too much.
Alan Walsh is going to ask for a ton of money and push as far as he can and say to the team, well, okay, Huberto without Huberto is a huge loss. He can wait it out. He is, you know, he's not giving anything up right now, aside from, you know, if he's looking at it on a long-term basis. I mean, that's the way Walsh goes, right, guys? I mean, that's how he works. So that, to me, is the reason why it's happening. If I'm the Panthers, I've seen good years and bad years from Huberto. Obviously, you like what you saw this past year, and you're going to build your team around Bjugstad and around Barkov and around Huberto. You've complemented by adding a guy like Riley Smith. think you get a little bit faster with the trade of Jimmy Hayes. Obviously, you love the core of Ekblad on the back end. So you like what you have here. But you just signed Bukestad to a long-term deal. You could argue that Bukestad's a better, more valuable player than Jonathan Huberdeau. If that's the case, are you suddenly going to give Huberdeau more money than a guy like Bukestad?
Probably not.
It's an interesting question. So then maybe you say, okay, I'll do a year or two deal. If I do a year with him, then you give him arbitration rights immediately. And like, unlike Kruger, he'll let, you know, Alan Wall, he'll push him to arbitration. Look what they did with Frolik for years, you know, so for the year before he left. So I think Walsh is probably pushing for big money, big term. And the Panthers are probably pushing for fairly long term, but less money. And it might end up resolving itself on a 2-year deal. And then you reevaluate at that time how good of a player he is. If he's not that good, maybe you're happy you didn't lock him in. Well, you're going to be happy you didn't lock him into Walsh's terms.
Sure.
If you lock him into a reasonable deal long-term, then you can take the risk. But he's a pretty talented player, and they have a nice core there. So Walsh is the reason that's not done, in my opinion. And back to what I was saying before, quickly before the break, Drew, about the trade. I believe you can trade a guy post-arbitration ruling. You can't trade a guy from a year after you've matched an offer sheet. That's what it was.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Kevin Kennedy, the founder of Puck Talks Live, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop. Plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Kevin Kennedy, the founder of Puck Talks and Hoop Talks and the Baseball Pitch Talks.
And Drew
Kevin
Talks.
And Drew Talks. Kevin, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, nice to be here, guys.
You know, Kevin, obviously, you know, we were talking about Puck Talks earlier in the show. We gave away a pair of tickets to Calvin a couple segments ago. You know, why don't you give for our audience sort of an overview of what people can expect when Puck Talks comes to Winnipeg on September the 15th?
Sure, yeah. So what's nice about Puck Talks is that the live platform really allows for a very uncensored, maybe that's the addition of beer as well, but it allows for a very authentic kind of conversation about hockey. I think, you know, being in Toronto, we really get bombarded with Leaf talk, but we've found that it's not exactly the most compelling. It's a lot of talk about, you know, the fourth liners and things like that, whereas this show is more about, you know, hockey stories. You know, we've had Pierre LeBrun on the show about, you know, talking about hanging out in Dean Lombardi's garage and talking about strategy. And it really allows for that kind of long form type of discussion. And I think the environment, you know, it's casual, right? It's not a corporate event. So I think, like, the fans have really appreciated that.
Kevin, how is it going to work as far as the format goes? I've obviously never attended one of these, but what can fans expect here in Winnipeg when they go? Is it going to be a little bit of a presentation format, or is it going to be kind of a general roundtable discussion?
Yeah, so I come from a music background, so I really just sort of looked at when I used to build rock shows, you know, where you'd have a couple opening acts and then you'd have a headliner. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like a three-act play. So whether it's a one-on-one discussion with an author, and then probably at the end, we ended up doing a roundtable to discuss the local team. I think it's really about the audience Q&A. So every show and every panel has a Q&A with the audience. So you get that direct interaction with the fans. And I think being there in person really eliminates all the dumb questions, because it's really hard to hide behind a dumb question when you're right there in person.
So Kevin, obviously Richie P is going to be the headliner. I hope Lawless knows that, right?
Well, I'm sure. I hope he does an encore, too.
Yeah, is it true that Gary Lawless has asked to be provided with the questions beforehand?
No comment.
Kevin, talk to us about the history of this event. I mean, you know, Puck Talks is obviously going across Canada, but if I'm not mistaken, it actually started with baseball, with Pitch Talks. Is that correct?
Yeah, we launched Pitch Talks in 2014, and we launched it in a basement where I just had this idea to sort of, you know, it was sort of part, you know, rock show and part TED Talks. So, you know, I'd been seeing what TED Talks is doing, and I thought, well, that's interesting, except the subject matter, I'm just a sports freak, right? So I just replaced, you know, the subject matter and made it baseball. And we put Shai Davidi from Sportsnet and Dan Schulman and Mike Wilner, and we put him in a basement, and we talked about baseball. And from there, it's just grown. You know, we've done shows in New York and Boston and Florida. And, I mean, people want to talk about sports, and they want to be in a room with other passionate people.
Kevin, for our audience that they missed out on getting the tickets earlier when we gave them away, but how can they get tickets? How do you go about getting tickets for this event September 15th here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, so right on our website, pucktalkslive.com, you can click on the Winnipeg event. You can see you know, all the speakers and see our other shows in Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver and Toronto. And yeah. Go from there.
Kevin, by the way, during this event that's taking place with which Richie, as we mentioned, is on the panel, is there a way you can lock Drew in a basement while this is going on?
Yes, I'm sure we can figure that out.
Do I get a say in that matter, or am I just automatically locked in the basement?
Well, it's whatever Kevin decides.
Okay,
and we'll tape your mouth so it'll be Drew doesn't talk.
There you go, Drew doesn't talk. Kevin, appreciate your time this morning. We're looking forward to Puck Talks here in Winnipeg September 15th, and of course looking forward to Richie being one of the panelists on stage there.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much, Kevin. Take care. So that's coming up again September 15th, Puck Talks Live here in Winnipeg. And between now and then, we're going to be giving away a pair of tickets each and every Saturday on the show.
More surprising, Drew, is next week is going to be the debut of The Burger.
The Burger, and I'm not going to be here.
Yeah, wow.
Unfortunately, my oldest friend is getting married, so I'm going to...
So he's, what, 85?
Yeah, he's about 85. It's his fourth marriage is what it is, in fact.
Well, oldest friends, probably.
Yeah, it was an age joke there.
Yeah, shout out to our buddy Jonathan Wald, who's getting married.
Yeah.
But we're not saving you a burger.
No, I know. Don't worry.
Corey's going to get your burger.
That's fine.
And then we'll give one of the other burgers away or something. But
that's fine.
Just so you know, we're not keeping one for you or anything like
look,
that.
Look, on September 1st, I'm going to Bernstein's Deli to order the burger anyway. So you guys don't need to save me
really?
The burger. Where I'm just going to go straight to Bernstein's on September 1st and pick it up then. I think that's it. That's it for this Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. A big thanks to our guest, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, and of course, Kevin Kennedy from Puck Talks Live. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Randall Plumbing. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Corey, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.